Welcome to another episode of Digital in Aesthetics with me, Rick O'Neill, and one of my awesome friends and colleagues from the medical aesthetics sector. Hope you enjoy and see you on the other side. Okay, so you want guests with credentials, you want impressive, high-profile people. My guest today has got a very long list of credentials, and I'm going to read them. There's oodles of them. And if I get this wrong, do let me know. MSc Clinical and Experimental Medicine, UCL. MBBS in Medicine, Barts and the London. BDS in Dentistry. So does this mean you're what they call dual qualified? Dual something.
Yeah, that's right. I did dentistry first, and I did medicine after. Actually, that's not up to date. I don't want to be like, this sounds like a massive humble brag, and I sound like a complete ass for saying that. I just finished a master's as well.
I was going to ask about that, because the last bullet on the list is commencing.
Yeah.
So then you had PG Dip Practical Dermatology, PG Dip Cosmetic Science, Certificate of Advanced Aesthetic Dentistry, member of the A4M Fellowship in Metabolic Nutritional and Functional Medicine, Cert of Advanced Metabolic Endocrinology. Mm. I don't even know what that is. Botanical Medicine, and is commencing but have now finished Master's Degree in Integrative Health Sciences at George Washington University.
Yeah, that's right. I literally just finished, and I'm thrilled to have finished, actually, because it was a bit of a slog. I just started one just now at Queen Mary's, you know, the one that everyone seems to do these days, the aesthetic medicine one. And that was mainly because I was a bit worried about any new regs that might come in.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Prohibitive.
And also the list was a bit short, so you needed to add to that. I think that is hugely impressive. As someone who's not a particularly academic person, I just think, crikey, that is.
I didn't want to do it, to be honest, the one at Queen Mary's, but I thought, well, I better do it.
I'm sure you'll be fine. I'm sure you know. You probably should be lecturing on it.
Well, yeah. I took a step back from teaching, actually. I used to do a bit for Teoxone, and I used to do a bit for Allergan after that. But I just wanted to sort of refocus my attention. I think it's the kind of thing that you have to be doing all the time to be really good at.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I'm the same. I'm keeping my hand in on digital front, not medicine. Heaven forbid. Do not let me near a syringe. Someone's going to get hurt. So you've been practicing cosmetic medicine since 2007, and at the time that this was written, you'd done over 15,000 procedures.
Yeah.
I presume that number's gone up then.
Yeah, I don't know now, actually.
And you've also built a hilarious and highly informative YouTube channel, which has grown to 50,000 subscribers.
Yeah, again, I need to give that a bit more love than I currently do at the moment. But yeah, the YouTube. I tell you what, it's harder doing YouTube than it is Instagram.
Yeah, we're gonna dig into that, because I'm super interested about all of that. Because YouTube, as a channel and a marketing method for individual clinics and practitioners, is unusual, because it's work. Like you said, it's almost a job, right? My son thinks that he can become a millionaire YouTuber overnight, but it's actually a hard graft. So those are all the creds. You've been doing it for a long time now. let me officially welcome you to my little podcast that I'm getting off the ground, Digital and Aesthetics. So it has a little bit of a red thread of digital things. So that's why we want to talk about YouTube, Instagram, all of that. But also, I'm just really interested in how people get into the field, your bit about your background, and it's a bit more long form than an Instagram reel, so we can get to know you a little bit better. So thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
My absolute pleasure. So do you want to start by putting in your words a little bit about your setup, the clinic that you've got, the lovely clinic, as it's named, and your sort of ethos and approach with your patients?
Yeah, actually, I'm doing a bit of rebranding at the moment, so we're going to shorten it to TLC.
I like that.
When the new brand is out, which has been over 18 months, a labor of love. It's shocking how long this stuff takes to do properly, isn't it? It's absolutely nuts. When I contacted the guy, I was like, oh, I'm sure it's just, you know, a few months project. Just do the website, you know, just, you know, do that. No, it's the whole thing. So we did audience segmentation and looking at how it would work in a physical space and, you know, what was trending in terms of colors. Oh my God, it was a whole...
Oh, you're really digging in deep then. I like that.
Yeah, it was a whole thing because the clinic space had to work with the website, and it seemed like a good time to look at, you know, what both would look like. So we went for these, actually, I'm sorry, this is a massive segue, but we went for these really cool, very contemporaneous colors because of the pandemic and, you know, Brexit, and everybody's losing their minds about those things. So people are apparently looking for a very subdued but familiar color palette. So we went for things like that. It's got this kind of like retro futuristic type vibe to it, which I am really digging right now.
I'm interested in that from the sort of patient experience perspective, because there's always, in medical aesthetics, there's always this balance generally between medicine and beauty. You're in the middle somewhere, and clinics and spaces need to somehow capture both, don't they? It's like, oh, we want this to feel medical, sterile, clinical, clean, professional, but also welcoming, cool, trendy, warm, all of those things. So I like the fact that you've dug into that. And it seems like you also understand the difference between visual identity and brand.
Yes. Well, I should hope so after 18 months of looking at it.
You've lived it.
Yeah, it's been a wild ride, let me tell you. So at the moment, there's three doctors. We work together. Actually, we're all dual qualified, so we all have done medicine and dentistry. We don't have any therapists right now. However, that is subject to change in the next 12 months.
Is this a vacancy posting? Is this an early signal?
Well, I'm always open to working with experienced people who fit our vibe. I think that's the most important thing. Have they got the right kind of attitude, and do they pass the vibe check? Because one thing that I've realized over the past God knows how many years is that you should be, I know it's a cliche, but be slow to hire and quick to fire. 100%. And that's a mistake that I've made on several occasions. Not
been there.
Yeah, what an idiot though. I mean, you look back on it and you think, oh my God, why did I do that?
To be fair, some people are really good at interviews.
True. Yeah, true. But then as soon as you find out that actually it was not as you'd hoped for, just get rid, I think, because as soon as you come past that 2-year mark, you're in trouble, and then you have to...
Yeah, and some people start to have an impact on your other existing people who did pass the vibe check. That's really damaging.
Yeah, it is. It's very, very damaging. So
how do you quantify that vibe check then? What is the vibe of TLC and your team?
Well, it's competency and fun together. So the new branding, I think you'll see when you see it, is very, it's quite playful, much more so than anything that I've seen in this space so far. You know, we've got these cute little animations and what have you, but it's of course underpinned by this rigorous structure that we all have behind us. I think it's quite unusual to have three people working together who have both medicine and dentistry, and we've all been aesthetics for a long time, actually.
I think that is pretty. I don't know of any other setup that's identical to that.
Yeah,
and it's that dual nature, dental and aesthetics, comes with a whole different outlook on how you approach things, right?
I would say so. When I used to train for these companies, the dentists would always be the best injectors. Sorry, but it's
true. Well, we're only 10 minutes in. Controversial statements already. I love it.
No, I mean, if they're new, I don't mean if they're experienced people, but, you know, if you just take, you know, a random sample of doctors, dentists and nurses and put them in a room, of course the dentists are going to be better because they're used to doing practical procedures. So, you know, if you don't agree with me, fight me.
Ding ding.
Yeah, go ahead.
And so going back then, before you discovered aesthetics, what were you doing? And how did you trip over into this world of aesthetic treatments?
Well, I hadn't done medicine at that point. I'd only done dentistry. So I started as a dentist, and then when I was back at med school, that was one of the ways that I paid my way through university. And I got into it because it was something that I was interested in having done personally myself. And it just sort of went from there. To be honest, Rick, I never wanted to have a clinic. I never wanted any of this. I wanted just to work for someone, a bigger chain, take my money at the end of the month and you know, go home happy on my 30k a month or whatever. That's what I would have been happy doing. But at that point when I started, I was unemployable. I couldn't get anybody to take me.
So... that this is something I can definitely relate to, because I'm not employable, never have been.
So nobody wanted me.
Yeah.
I didn't have a choice.
I also don't like being told what to do. That's part of the problem.
Yeah, neither do I. So I thought, oh God, I'm going to have to do this myself. And I really didn't want to, I really, really didn't want to do this.
Would you say that you're like a reluctant entrepreneur then?
Yeah, 100%. I still am. If somebody came along and said, oh, you know, you can, I'll just take all the stress away from you. All you have to do is come in, do the injections, maybe do a few YouTube videos. I'd bite their hand off probably. Because the other stuff, the back end stuff, the hiring, the firing, all that gubbins, making the website. It's nice to be creative, of course, but it's difficult.
I mean, we talked before I hit record about, you know, issues with software and things like that. And I guess that's part of the whole operational, business, commercial side of it that can be really irritating, because it's kind of, you know, what you want and you know how to get there. And it's just things like that get in the way. Definitely if it's not your field of preference.
I don't know what has happened since COVID, but I swear, since COVID, companies just cannot deliver on the promises that they make. And it's not just this piece of clinic software. It's other companies. Like, I was having a website made before the one that I'm making now. And they didn't finish the website. I'm like, where's the website? Oh, you know, we closed the company. Like, what? You just close the company partway through. Like, this is...
Hey, same thing happened to me with a sofa, to be fair. Like, we paid... a lot of money. We had a delivery date, and then the company went bust.
Right,
gone, money gone, no sofa.
That's happened to me as well in the past as well with furniture. The company went bust. There was a conversation had this morning about a blood testing company on Harley Street that is, you know, quite a big testing company, and they told us that we can do our bloods in one way. Now they've decided that actually we can't do that, and they were trying to turn the patient away at reception. Like, you can't just do that. You have to, there's a process, people, that you have to follow if you're not going to do something anymore. I don't know, there just seems to be, people just don't care anymore. And that actually, I'm the opposite to that. I really care. Mm. Which I think is maybe why it works.
I think it is, personally, because I'm someone who's very, very slowly grown a business over the last 20 years, done it organically, and said no to more than we've said yes to all the time. We could have been 1,000 times the size, but it would have been awful.
Yeah.
Awful. And everyone would have hated us. And I would have hated it. And so I'm with you. I just want to do good work with good people and get it done, delivered, have fun along the way. And I think a lot of the time, and I'm not sure what the COVID effect is really, obviously a lot of people suffered loss, financial loss and team disruption and things like that. I know that was the case with the sofa thing. Oh my God. But then a lot of customer service has gone out the window. And I think we've gone too far. And this is me saying this, too far with automation in some cases. So there's a lot of, like my wife tears her hair out. She can't ever actually just speak to someone.
Sorry.
It's all just fill a form or use an app or ironic me talking about that. But there is a time and a place for the digital and for the care part. So that's why, again, coming back to your brand piece and how you've got into it, it makes total sense. The TLC part, they come together beautifully. You've described what things about it you love. It's the man flu creeping in, Sarah. I told you. Just so everybody knows, I am suffering with a very serious condition called man flu today. Sarah's qualified enough to know how serious that is. But yeah, the TLC thing, it's like the coming together of why you got into it, the your nature with people. I think that's great. But what one of my questions for you was about the whole entrepreneur piece, and we've kind of touched on how you're a bit of a reluctant entrepreneur, but you are an entrepreneur, you're a business owner, you're going through a whole rebrand, you're building this clinic. What are the sort of big lessons that you've learned over the years in terms of building a clinic? And I guess this is through the lens of there'll be people listening that are just at the beginning of that or just considering taking a leap from employment into doing it themselves. Maybe they relate to what you said about, oh, I never wanted to do this, but they're thinking about doing it. What were the sort of big lessons you think you've learned along the way?
The first thing is don't hire people if you can get a freelancer to do the same job, because you'll get absolutely skinned alive with national insurance and pension contributions and all that nonsense. So, and you don't have the flexibility as well. So never employ someone unless you absolutely have to do it. The second thing I think we've already said is if you are going to employ them, do it very slowly and get rid of them. If you think it's not going to work for you, yeah, you have to do it straight away.
100%. Because
otherwise, you end up paying out a fortune. And it's bad for you as well. It's bad for your mental health and your vibe. So,
and your reputation.
Yeah, 100%. So
there's people there representing you and your brand. And
the other thing is about scaling. So don't try and do it too fast. I think I kept my cost real low for a long time. And that has been brilliant because you never know when something like COVID is going to happen and you're going to need to scale down really, really quickly. And fortunately, it wasn't that much of a problem because I could do that to a degree, the way that things were structured. So never commit yourself unless you absolutely have no choice. And even then, try and get out of it. All contracts are negotiable. Even if you find a contract, it's negotiable.
Yeah.
And this is stuff that I didn't realize from the beginning. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's like an old-fashioned Northern thing. Like, oh, you know, that's not the way you do it. You've signed a contract, so it has to be like that. Or that's what they want. So who's they? Just
they.
Yeah.
I think some of it, I mean, I can't speak for you or anyone really, but something I've noticed with very academic medical people is that there is a sort of adherence and deference to that kind of thing, that those kind of frameworks and contracts and agreements, whereas I guess people outside of that world are a bit more, what's the word,
flexible,
yeah. Belligerent, you know, that,
yeah,
kind of
morally bankrupt,
all morally bankrupt people. But I totally agree with all the ones you've said. One of the big ones for me that sprung to mind when you were talking about keeping your costs low and being lean with contractors and stuff like that, which I also agree with, because then it's like a tap you can turn on and off when you need to. One of the things my dad told me when I was just getting started is, Rick, you can only run out of cash once. So be careful with that and build a runway. And so that's something all the way through any ventures I've had or agencies or what have you, we've always got a couple of years of cash, because like you say, you never know when something crazy is going to kick off or the world may just stop calling you or whatever. So, and it feels really good to have a runway. So if you can get into that position where you've done what you've said, like you keep costs down, don't overcommit, and then just get to work and put cash aside and build that runway, it feels so much more comfortable, doesn't it?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Someone said to me once, you have to, the great phrase is, I have to be fair to the business. And that's a real catch-all, right? I mean, you could say that, you could say that to anyone. Like, oh, you know, why do you normally charge this amount of money? Oh, well, I have to be fair to the business. Why, for anything.
I love that. Be fair to the business. Yes, the business is quite demanding this month. And
absolutely.
I have to be fair to it. Yes. I think the business would be what I use to describe my wife and teenage kids. Yes. The business this month has certain needs. And yeah, I will be taking that dividend out.
Exactly. Another thing as well is if you're going to do, say you're doing a fit out, commercial fit out or something like that, I think you need to talk to somebody who does a lot of those things, because there's a lot of rules and regulations around that that maybe you're not aware of if you're not from a commercial property background, that even if you do residential property, you don't necessarily know about. Like, for example, if a building is not habitable because you've demolished it, you don't have to pay business rates on it.
Yeah.
How are you supposed to know that?
I'm going to drop in a quick endorsement here for my mate Gary. He's got a business called The Clinic Builders. That's all they do is help practitioners that are building or renovating clinics. And they do CQC, they do surgical, operating theatres, everything. He's the man for that. Now, having talked about that entrepreneurial side of it, let's talk a bit about the Tinternet and social media. And I'm super interested in how your YouTube channel started. Was it a very deliberate strategic thing, or what happened? How did it come about in the first place, and how has it evolved to now 50,000 subscribers and great engagement? I see even a video went on last week, and pretty much every time you post there'll be a whole few screens worth of comments on the video. So you've got to a point where there is an audience, there is engagement, but how did it start and how's it gone to now?
I mean, it's okay. The engagement is, look, I had a baby and I had a lot of other stuff going on, so I could not focus on it to the same degree, regardless of what people tell you. I mean, I was exhausted after having the baby. I mean, I think it must be some hormonal thing. So I wasn't myself for at least maybe, you know, a year and a bit.
I've seen it done twice. It looks tiring.
It's awful. I don't recommend it. Stay away from it if you can.
More important business lessons there.
Yeah, it's very tough. Actually, I was going to have a surrogate and then COVID happened. And I think that would have solved a lot of issues. But anyway, I couldn't because of COVID.
That's a whole other podcast episode.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. So the YouTube channel. So actually, it was a bit of a punt because at the time, I mean, this is what, 2015, maybe even earlier than that. I thought at the time, oh, wow, this Instagram's getting a bit saturated now, isn't it?
What did you know?
It's hard to get traction on this platform now.
You were way ahead of your time with that comment.
Yeah, clearly. So I thought, maybe a different channel would be good. And I didn't like how you couldn't talk to people at that time on Instagram. You know, it was literally just take a picture, put that on.
Yeah.
And I felt like there was more to be said around the topic. So I thought, let me hire a videographer, which at the time for me was a massive punt. It was a huge deal. And then we recorded a series of, I think it was six, it doesn't matter how many it was. And that one, I mean, it did okay. It wasn't amazing. And I just kept doing it and doing it and doing it. And then there was one video in particular, which was basically like a celebrity dragging video, which at the time, look, there are trends on social media and stuff that you would do or say 5 years ago, maybe looks old fashioned now, and maybe you wouldn't do it now. So.
But it blew up, did it? That one?
Yeah, yeah, it did really well. And it sort of went from there. And then I posted a lot of large volume filler cases. And I think people who were looking for a real change, they identified with that. And then as a consequence, we got really busy.
Yep.
And with the
posting the content is one thing. Did you post it and leave it? Or was there a strategy to draw attention to the YouTube channel? Or that was the plan? Put as much of that out as you could.
To be honest, I had no strategy whatsoever when I started. I was very naive at the beginning. And it was just pure luck that it worked. I think now if you were going to try and do it, it would be much harder because there's so much more content out there. It was just, it worked at the time because there actually wasn't that much stuff out there. And now I am kind of refocusing back onto it with a much greater strategy in place. So, I'm working with someone, I don't know, can I mention him? Can I not mention him on the podcast? I don't know. Well, anyway, I'm working with someone who does social media strategy more for Instagram now. He doesn't really do the whole YouTube thing, but I'm hoping to grow that aspect of my business more because I'm getting older, Rick. Older. I don't really want to be doing like four long clinical days per week. My back hurts, my feet hurt. You know, I want to be doing more social stuff if I can. And then, you know, pushing people to go and see the other amazing injectors and possibly therapists, whoever, in the clinic.
Absolutely. So what has the following and the engagement through YouTube, what does it, has it done, or what does it do, or what is it doing for the business and for you?
Oh, it's great because it primes people beforehand. So they know you, they know the personality. So they know already before they come in, they're not going to get some, you know, guy wearing a suit with a haircut. They're going to get somebody who's, well, me. And if they don't like that, then they don't come in the first place, which is great. And it sort of pre-qualifies them as well because they will have seen you do the procedures, so they understand what they're on the hook for before they come in. But I guess you could say that about social media in general. You could say that about Instagram too. But YouTube, I just liked because it was long-form content.
Are you able to track new patients directly from having found you on YouTube?
Yeah, I always ask them when they come in, and then we make a note of that on the software that we use.
Yeah. So that still is the case. They're still driving.
Yeah, YouTube is massive for me.
That's cool.
Yeah, huge.
Presumably, it has also helped on the PR side and your sort of own, your personal profile.
Yeah, to a degree, but unless you're doing a content piece where you're placing a case study in a magazine with direct before and afters, I'm not sure that you really do get much from PR like that. Okay, it may help to keep you fresh in people's minds, but just because they've seen, oh, Dr. Sarah Tonks has made a comment about this particular skincare item, you're like, oh, great, I must go and get my lips done there. It doesn't really happen like that. It's only if... So I did a few case studies in various different newspapers, Daily Mail, The Mirror, various other things like that, and they always do really, really well. So I'm sure that Dr. Judy Todd, with her recent Neogen, and you know, she was the whole reason as well why Morpheus 8 became such a thing, even though it's a, you know, I don't have it, so. But I do know people that do have it, and they say that people come because it's, you know, because it's Morphe's 8, they know the brand. So something like that, I think, is worth you doing, but the other bits, not sure.
And I think it's important to highlight what you said, that it is harder now to do what you did, because I think with YouTube and Instagram and things like that, I think people starting today now who look at a practitioner that's got 100,000 followers and it seems hugely engaged and it clearly does drive some inquiries.
Yeah.
They look at that as a huge mountain. And I'm sorry to say, from evidence that I see all the time, that is near enough impossible to do from today, starting from scratch, because your ability to reach people is on the slide every year. Yeah. So is it the same with YouTube, do you think?
You're never going to be able to do it with Instagram. I only have 11,000 followers on Instagram on my account, because at the beginning, I put all my effort into YouTube, not Instagram. So I think YouTube is different, because there are fewer people on YouTube, but that is because it is so much harder to make the content for YouTube. Yeah. Or at least it was. Now it's probably a bit easier because you can realistically film things more easily on your phone. But even the phone dimension is incorrect, because you're filming like that. You need to be like that for YouTube. So there's a lot of things that, you know, you probably don't realize until you actually start doing it, how much harder it is. And then the editing as well. There is native editing on the YouTube platform, but it's crap. You can't use it.
Yeah, it's pretty basic, isn't it? But I think it's, as I say, I think it's important that people get that sense of perspective as what was achievable 5 or 10 years ago through any of these social platforms is much, much, much harder now. Yeah. And that's not to say don't bother. There's still really important channels. But I think, like, from my perspective and what I go around talking about is, for that reason, diversify into all the other areas of digital, email marketing, automation, Google optimization, content, written content, and have counteract how hard it is, and don't restrict yourself to just putting all your effort into Instagram and then sitting and crying about the fact that you got one inquiry this month through Instagram.
If I was starting now from scratch, I think if I didn't have any equipment or anything, I would do probably TikTok, and I'd make the content as weird and controversial as I possibly could. So there are a few accounts out there that have done really well because they say stuff which is like plainly not true. And basically slag everyone else off.
You need to cut through, that's for sure.
Yeah, so I think, yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
And, you know, maybe you could do it that way, by slagging everyone off.
But also try and form partnerships with people, like, you know, your local beauty salon or something, or your dentist, or, you know, just people like that who can send you referrals.
Yeah,
that now.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think those kind of tie-ups where there's sort of natural referrals, like personal trainer, local spa, hotel, all of that kind of stuff. Yeah, absolutely. And that works from a Google perspective as well. If you write an article for their website, point it back at yours. I'm quite big on this whole, let's just cut the BS about Instagram today. Because Instagram today is not Instagram 8 years ago, 5 years ago, 4 years, even 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
A lot harder. You can still do it. I think what you've said is absolutely right. There's new channels, TikTok. We won't even go there on the whole conspiracy theories about it. But there's a whole new generation coming through on that channel. It's a whole different format. YouTube are trying to copy it. Instagram are trying to copy it, aren't they? You've got YouTube Shorts, Instagram Reels. I'm not sure where YouTube Shorts is really going.
I don't use them.
It's bizarre.
I don't do it.
But I think that having that perspective and not beating yourself up that, yes, okay, so-and-so did it, but they started 8 years before you.
Yeah, 100%. I can't even do it now, Rick. If I wanted to grow my Instagram, I can't even do it. So if I can't do it, I've got all these people on YouTube. How are you going to do it from nothing?
Yeah. I was going to ask you about Instagram because obviously you have this dry sense of humor. You've done some really funny stuff and cool stuff on Instagram that gets engagement. So I think that is worth everyone looking at because that's part of the whole cut through piece. Yeah, if I see you in an alleyway with some filler boxes in your coat, I'm going to watch that because I just want to know what's going on. Or if there's some sort of boxing match going on between two injectable moisturizers, for example, then I want to go and look at that. So I think there's definitely things people can learn from how you've done it. But you've said yourself, it's still hard. So what does Instagram do for you these days? Is it still generating new business, do you think? Or
actually, I make that content for myself. So I do it because I think it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
And we've all got this sort of creative streak in us, don't we? That yeah. just yearns to break free from this medical mold now and again. So I don't do it because I think, oh, this is going to be hilarious and people are going to share it and, you know, I'm going to get more business like that, because it's often not the case. I will make partnerships with certain micro-influencers in London. Or sometimes abroad. And that sometimes helps. But even then, you know, you're not going to get a ton of followers because you've done, you know, somebody's lips who used to go out with a member of, I don't know, Green Day or something. You know, he's not, it's just not a thing. Because it's a different audience, isn't it? You know, they're following for, I don't know, salacious Green Day tips. They're not following them for...
I think, yeah. I guess what I'm aiming at is for people in the first couple of years, people that have maybe struggled with social media, it's having a realistic expectation of what you can get out of it and what's it for. Is it for your own entertainment? Is it for... impressing the brands or your colleagues? Is it for attracting new patients? Is it for engaging existing patients? Or is it all of those things? It's important to think about it and to have a realistic expectation, because I have people come up to me at the end of talks and they'll say, oh yeah, hi, I've got 1,000 followers on Instagram and I only get 5 inquiries a week. I'm like, that's bloody amazing. What's your problem? And so I think it's about setting expectation, understanding the wider context of what people get out of these things, how they do it. So I think it's just something worth talking about.
I actually think that's a really good point. What is the point of Instagram? Is it for impressing your colleagues? That is a really good point, because what you sometimes see is somebody will get a name for example, I don't know, doing ultrasound when they do fillers or something. You have to think about, who is that going to attract? Actually, you're going to get a bunch of patients coming in who are overly concerned, maybe with good reason sometimes, maybe sometimes not with good reason, want you to ultrasound them. And then what are you going to do then? You take out the filler, and then what? Like, is that a big ticket item, removing hyaluronic acid, and then you replace it with what, a syringe? Like, what's the point of doing it? And then the next time they see something that they like on Instagram that sounds sciencey, they'll go there instead. So I don't know. I don't think that is the best market to be targeting. I target people who are like me. Maybe that's what everyone should do. Just
I think that's a brilliant strategy, targeting people like you. I mean, for me, I always come back to, look, this is a business. This is a marketing channel. The only thing that really, really matters when it comes down to it is how many of those people following and engaging are within a traveling distance of your clinic and want what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Really, that's what it comes down to. Everything else is fluff and nonsense, or KOL opportunities, which get handed out like sweets, right? So that's part of it. So one of my questions was going to be, have you got a sense, either with YouTube or Instagram or both, have you ever thought about it, looked at it, what's the split of audience in terms of the industry versus the public? And then in the public, the sort of split between people who would ever be likely to be patients versus they just really like the vibe and the content.
The YouTube is definitely more international. So sometimes I get patients who are in London for business or on holiday, and they just want to come in because they've been watching the channel for a few years, which is really nice. Whereas on Instagram, it tends to be more local people.
That's good. That is good, because that's well targeted. And sometimes what I see with our clients, when we get their Google local optimization really singing, they suddenly get a better quality of more local follower on their social media. Because they come through Google, they check out the website, they follow them on social. Now they're getting a better quality of engagement because they focused on Google. But that, if with the majority of your Instagram audience being local, that's a really good start, because it means you haven't necessarily gone spray and pray and ended up with 80% Indonesian children following your Instagram account, which is never that useful. I have seen it.
I'm not sure it was deliberate, but I think it's because if I do work with an influencer for Instagram, they do tend to be around here.
Yeah, it's. I think that's where it's at, especially the micro level of influencer. Mm-hmm. Someone who's maybe sort of recognizable for the actual area, the geographical area, rather than the huge, expensive celebrity.
Yeah, I don't really...
It's kind of like the difference between when you talk about SEO, there's national SEO, which is really hard work and really hard to compete, and also not that relevant to a clinic, versus the Google Map results. That's like big, expensive celebrity versus micro-influencer from the same town. Yeah. They're kind of similar channels. Where do you think Instagram's going then? What's going to happen in terms of aesthetics and how it's used by practitioner and patient? What's going to happen? It's hard at the moment. Is it going to get any better, easier?
I don't think so. I think just hyper-local. So it seems like people are drilling down more and more and more, using it more like a local Yellow Pages rather than international, if that makes sense.
I think so, yeah. And because about a year ago, they made a couple of changes to the search features of Instagram, which made it more useful as a search engine. So I don't know if you remember, but when you used to search, all it would give you is the closest hashtag to what you were searching for, or an account. But now it looks for keywords, so your caption copy matters, your location tags matter, because it will show you more posts closer to you. So I think you're right. So little mechanical tips for people is include the words of your town in your captions, tag your local area when you post, and you're going to find people closer to you that don't already follow you. So, and we talked about the industry split. What's, in terms of your clinic, what's the sort of biggest source of new patients into the clinic across all the possible channels?
It's either YouTube or referral, with YouTube, a bit of Instagram as well. So it's a mix, really.
Yeah. And in terms of ER, you talked about the difference between the features and the little quotes. When you do a whole thing, like a case study or something, is that like a really short, sharp spike? And are they good quality leads, or how does that kind of play out?
No, it's more like if it's normally one of the silly videos that will do well, and then people will start to look through the other ones. Yeah. So the other ones might not get that much traction when you put them out there. But then if you make something that's a bit, you know, a bit stupid, and then people watch that, then they'll see the others and then they'll call. So it's more of like a steady drip.
I've noticed that with podcasts, actually. It's another kind of channel that we haven't really talked about, but obviously we're doing one. So let's talk about that as well. Because I think they're having a massive resurgence. having had gone a bit quiet for a while, there's now huge podcasts. And, you know, I mean, I'm a big fan of Stephen Bartlett. He's doing about 20 million downloads a month with his podcast. It's insane. But that tends to happen. Someone finds one episode, then they go through the back catalogue.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a slow burn, evergreen type of content. Whereas a tweet or a post it's gone. Yeah. It's gone. Very rarely do people delve into the back catalogue of your social posts, whereas they will for YouTube, podcasts, blog articles as well, have that kind of similar slow burn effect. I was going to ask, if we stick you in a DeLorean and you go back to Sarah 15 years ago, or let's say 2006, 2007, what advice would you give yourself to avoid any sort of painful mistakes or pitfalls, or to maybe accelerate quicker to where you are now? What would you tell yourself?
I'd say buy Bitcoin and sell November 2020, I think it was.
Yeah.
That would be the first thing. The second thing I would say is you just got to start. Like, something doesn't have to be perfect.
Preach. Preach. So,
yeah, nothing's ever going to be perfect. And I know as doctors, we always have very exacting high standards of ourselves and of other people. But let me tell you, the other people are only going to disappoint you every time, probably. And so don't hold yourself to those high standards.
It's unfair on you to do that, isn't it? Compared to most. I think it is. I'm with you on that one. Done is better than perfect.
Yeah. And what else? Don't leave money on the table when it comes to not selling people skincare or a skin treatment, or, you know, don't just think all you can do is Botox and fillers, because it's not.
Mm.
There's other things out there. That's why when I first saw Profhilo, I remember seeing it, I think it was at a CCR, when it first came over to the UK about 7 years ago or something. I remember thinking, wow, that is a great idea. I love that.
Yeah.
Because then they just have to keep coming back. So this regular recurring thing, and I think it was about 3 years after I started using it that the press finally picked up on it, and then suddenly everybody went wild for Profhilo. And of course now there's better things out there, but it's true, there are. In my opinion, fight me again.
I'll have to check back your boxing commentary thing. See who won. I wasn't quite sure.
No, so. Actually, they're both good. They're both good. They've got different purposes. And I think at that time, everybody was really focused just on doing injectables, but that's not the way that the wind is blowing now. People are looking for a different aesthetic now. They don't want to, it doesn't matter if they are or not, they think they don't want to be overfilled. Yes. So if you can do other things for them that sounds like you're not overfilling them, over time, you'll probably end up using the same amount of product, but, you know, you just have to lead people a little bit, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the experience thing, and it's the sort of signature package subscription long-term plan is what I see as working quite well.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly from a marketing perspective. Anyway, I can't say clinically is that the best thing, but in terms of how you guys market yourselves, that seems to be where the growth is at.
Yeah.
I think that's where you're ending up with more med spas, etc., where you've got all these different things coming together. Where do you think the aesthetics market is at now, and what's going to happen next? What's like the next big thing that people should be preparing for or aware of?
Well, I think it depends if you're talking about from a practitioner point of view or somebody who's selling devices and products, because the market's growing year on year. What is it, like 11% or something for certain injectables, but for the individual practitioner it's harder and harder to get a slice of that because there are more and more people coming into the business. So it's a problem because people's skills become very diluted and you get a bunch of people who are actually not very good at anything, as opposed to being fewer people who are very good at something. So I would like to see that changed, tackled, but whether or not.
Do you think there's a lot to be said for really, really niching into one particular treatment, or is it more about having a board?
If it was me starting now, try and find a niche, but I mean, you know, a lot of them have been done, haven't they?
I mean, if I'm just about to leave the NHS and I'm going to start in aesthetics, and I want to know roughly what sort of training should I be doing, what sort of treatment should I be offering to give myself a good chance, what would you say to me?
Oh my gosh. I would say whatever it is that you do in the NHS, I don't know, try and find a way to leverage it. Yeah. Like, it might be like, you know, if you do oculoplastics, of course you're going to do eyes. If you do, I don't know, geriatrics. Can we say that anymore? I don't know if there's a more modern term for that.
That's a medical term, isn't it? I'm sure.
I don't know. Maybe it's changed since I was in the NHS. It might have. But anyway, maybe you could look at, you know, treating older people.
Chronologically challenged.
Yeah. If you call it that. Yeah. If you do, I don't know, what else is there? You could maybe add in, so you're doing obs and gyne. There's a lot of cosmetic gynecology going on these days, isn't there? So I think there's always a niche that you can try and leverage.
Yeah, I think it gives you something to hang your story on. It gives you a hook for your marketing. It's part of the reason why my business only focuses on medical aesthetics, is because when we first started 20 years ago, we would do digital marketing for anybody. Oh, you got a zoo? Awesome. Yeah, we'll work with you. And we did Twycross Zoo, their website. But it makes it really hard because you don't know who to talk to, who to market to, where to go, who to speak to, who to write for, who to advise. So I think it's kind of the same from a clinic perspective. If you've got, maybe it's a niche of demographic or a niche of treatment area or a niche of expertise, you can use that as your hook and then grow from that. Now, there was something that I meant to ask you when we were talking about YouTube and social. I think you're naturally funny, and you obviously don't mind being in front of the camera because you've done so many YouTube videos. But I also meet a lot of people who can't think of anything worse. They don't want to be in front of the camera. They don't want to put themselves out there. Sometimes you have to just say, get over it. And my mate Richard says, shy kids don't get sweets, so just do it. What would you say to people like that in terms of creating a profile for themselves, for their clinic? If they are painfully shy, what can you do?
I'm not that great at it. I'm not somebody who can stand there and say, oh my God, listen, I'm the best at this. I'm just amazing at this, and this procedure. You really have to see me because the competition are trash. I can't do that. I can just, you know, have a conversation like we're having. And I think what you've got to remember is that the chances are the people who are saying that they're amazing probably aren't amazing. They're just good at saying that they're amazing. So you've got a civic responsibility, I think, to put yourself out there to make sure that people do go to the right place to get the result that they want. And it's kind of tough if you don't like talking, because you're gonna have to get used to it, and the more that you do it, you'll get used to it. So just, you know, pull on your
big girl pants,
yes, and go and do it. The first time I ever did a YouTube video, I had to have a couple of shots beforehand.
Nice.
I was really nervous.
And has that stuck as a routine, or?
Yes, I've had half a bottle of vodka.
That, just so everybody knows, that is a prerequisite for my podcast. I like that because it's ironic, isn't it? Because you've got practitioners that they have started, they are treating people, and they probably sit and speak to 10 people every day. And it's only really the same thing, but into a phone answering. Yeah. They know all the answers to the common questions. They know what they're doing. by and large, and they're doing it all day anyway. I feel like Gary Vaynerchuk, I don't know if you're aware of this guy.
Yes,
he says document, don't create. So rather than worrying about how do I create content, just document what you're already doing. And so there's a lot of merit in that approach. If you're shy or you don't think you can create a great video, just ask a patient now and again, do you mind if I have the camera on whilst we're doing this part of the consult or a bit of treatment? Yeah. Or you ask me some questions and I'll just tell you instead of the phone. And that actually is really good content. It's quite engaging.
I agree. I think it's a good words to live by.
Words to live by. Document, don't create. He also said that every business is now a media business. And I think you've hooked into that with the YouTube approach. Now, on the other side of it, when it comes to brands and manufacturers and people like that, what do you think they need to be doing? How can they better support the market, the practitioners, the patients? What else can they be doing that they're not already?
So I think support for clinics, because we're not from financial backgrounds, most of us, we don't know what's what, and that's always invaluable. The second thing is direct consumer marketing always helps. Not many companies actually do that over here. For example, the Morpheus 8, I've already mentioned it. It probably sells itself now. I don't know. I don't do it, but you probably don't really have to try with that.
I know that Hydrofacial definitely did a decent job of that because there's big awareness of that name. And if there's not already a clinic with that machine in your area, it's like, can be like turning a tap on.
Yeah.
People are already looking for it.
Profilo pretty much sells itself, although that's probably not through any effort of their own, to be quite honest.
Yeah, that's an interesting one because that they haven't really done a big direct-to-consumer push or anything, have they?
They haven't. But they're, I think they're the key things. And then, of course, any kind of help that these companies can give you with marketing. But I suppose that's part of the direct-to-consumer thing, isn't it?
I think so. And it's also about helping you guys to get better at your own direct marketing. Mm-hmm. Which I guess is probably a more efficient way of doing it, maybe. From the brand's perspective, they could spend multiple seven figures trying to raise awareness with consumers, and then they may or may not come into the clinic.
How do you just get a few key older influencers, get them to talk about it? Bob's your uncle.
Robert's your mother's brother. Brand awareness. I'll let them know. I think they could. I think they've been overcomplicating it.
Ground, please. Thank you.
Done. Send me an invoice. So last thing then, if you had one message for everyone in the aesthetics market in the UK, what is it? What's your message? Is there something we should start doing, stop doing, do more of, do less of?
Oh, man. That's a tough one. Is it for the patient or for the people doing the
industry? Let's say for the industry.
You're not special. You're not special. And it irritates me a little bit as somebody who is a bit of an introvert when a lot of people are like, I am actually the best at doing this. Everyone else. it really annoys me. I never say it myself. And I think dragging your colleagues is... It's not cricket. And there are people who do that. So, yes, kindly cease and desist.
So, # be kind and be humble.
Yes.
I like that. And obviously, we're working on a secret squirrel project, which we're not talking about. So, I'm looking forward to that and for people to see that as well. But can I just say thank you for your time? Really enjoyed the chat.
Me too.
And I will see you on our next Zoom or in-person encounter. But for now, thanks for being on the podcast, and I'll let you know when it's out.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Rick. Bye.
So that's it for this episode, folks. Hope you enjoyed the conversation and found some ideas and inspiration in there. As I said at the start, do let me know who you'd like to hear from, who you'd like me to speak to. I've got a very exciting guest coming up on the next episode. somebody who is absolutely smashing it out there at the moment, and somebody who I'm sure you'll all be familiar with. So looking forward to that one. In the meantime, keep up to date with our social updates, join the Aesthetic Entrepreneurs, and if you need any help, contact ltf.digital or find me at rickyoneill.co.uk. See you next time, guys. Cheers.